Welcome. I'm Sean Johnson of Wisconsin Public Radio.
I'm Frederica Freiberg of Wisconsin Public Television. We're going to spend the next hour quizzing the front-running candidates for Wisconsin Attorney General.
The Attorney General is the head of the State Department of Justice and the chief legal officer for the state. The Justice Department and its 672 employees includes prosecutors in the areas of criminal, civil, environmental, and consumer protection. It also includes criminal investigation units and the crime lab.
As a matter of disclosure, my husband is a staff attorney for the Justice Department. Before we introduce the candidates, we want to welcome our studio audience, which is made up of friends and families of the candidates, as well as a group of students from the UW-Madison Law School who are here to observe.
No opening statements tonight. Our basic format, the candidates will have one-minute responses to questions with 30-second follow-up answers.
The candidates will have one-minute closing statements. So once again, welcome, and let's begin.
The 2014 Wisconsin Attorney General Candidate Debate is a co-production of Wisconsin Public Television, Wisconsin Public Radio, and the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel.
Before we start the questioning, let's welcome the candidates. Republican Brad Schimmel serves as the Waukesha County District Attorney. He was first elected to that position in 2006.
Democrat Susan Happ is the current Jefferson County District Attorney. She was elected DA there in 2008. Welcome to both of you. We start our first question with Brad Schimmel, and a reminder that you have 1 minute each to respond. So first to you, Mr. Schimmel. More than 70% of likely voters in the last Marquette poll don't know either of you. Who are you, and how does that translate to serving as the Wisconsin Attorney General?
Well, first, thank you for making this debate possible tonight. Thank you, Ms. Happ, for participating. I'm looking forward to this. Huh, what do they need to know about me? Well, I first became a prosecutor nearly 25 years ago. I started as an intern in the Waukesha DA's office in 1989, was hired as an assistant DA in 1990. I've served in virtually every unit in the office, have tried somewhere around 150 jury trials in about every kind of crime you could imagine. And in 2006, I was elected district attorney there. My wife, Sandy, and I have been married for 18 years. We have two daughters. They're 13 and 11. We have a rescue dog, two rescue cats. I have a Harley Davidson I've had now for 20 years. Enjoy riding that. Spent 7 years as a road captain. And when I find a little bit of free time, I love playing bass guitar in a classic rock band called Four on the Floor.
All right. Susan Happ, same question to you. Who are you, and how does that translate to serving as the Wisconsin Attorney General?
Well, I also want to thank you for having us here, and thank you to Brad. You know, I'm a Jefferson native, a small rural town in south central Wisconsin where my parents were public school teachers. They raised me with a desire to have commitment to my community, to give back to the community, and to serve the public. And so I spent a decade in private practice as an attorney in Jefferson, where I was born and raised and where my family and I still live. I have an amazing husband, Dale, and an amazing daughter, Haley, who's 13. When I was in private practice, I engaged in criminal law, juvenile law. I worked as a guardian ad litem, which is someone who protects our children and our most vulnerable adults. I handled an array of civil matters and probate and estate planning. I was first elected in 2008 as district attorney, becoming the first Democratic district attorney in a very Republican county in 70 years. And so I have the independence to earn votes from Democrats, Republicans, and independents. And that's what I want to do to represent all of our citizens as AG.
A follow-up here. You might not imagine that there would be a follow-up on your own story, but another Marquette Law poll showed that more than half of Wisconsin residents don't know the current attorney general, who's been in office for 8 years. If you're elected, will they notice a difference at the top, Mr. Schimmel?
Well, you know, I think it's a good thing when prosecutors aren't in the paper, because that means things aren't going wrong. You know, I particularly note that, you know, during the first 4 years that J.B. Van Hollen was attorney general, the governor was a Democrat, the legislature was controlled by Democrats, and we didn't see a lot of turmoil. I intend to do the same thing, and that's why I've emerged as law enforcement's choice in this race, because they know I'll put public safety ahead of politics.
Susan Happ, do you suppose that if you were elected attorney general, the residents of Wisconsin would notice a difference at the top from J.B. Van Hollen, whom they apparently don't know?
I'm surprised by that figure, quite frankly. I would hope so, in the sense that I would hope that the voters would understand maybe a little bit more about the significance of what the Attorney General's office does, the array of civil matters, you know, consumer protection, environmental protection, along with being the state's top cop. So I would hope that I could bring some public attention, not to me personally, but to the tremendous amount of potential and opportunities that the Attorney General presents as being an advocate for all of our citizens.
All right, next question. You've been attacking each other relentlessly this campaign, turning this into one of the more negative campaigns in recent memory. The overriding theme in recent attacks is that you're both soft on crime. You're both district attorneys. You're prosecutors. Can you really look your opponent in the eye and tell them they're soft on crime? This goes first to you, Susan Happ.
I wouldn't do that. We actually had an editorial board last week with the Journal Sentinel, and I was actually asked to give Brad a grade. And I said, well, you mean like as a prosecutor? And they said, yes. And I said, I would give him a good grade as a prosecutor. So I think the negativity, unfortunately, has been all too acceptable, you know, with not necessarily as much with our campaigns, but certainly with our parties. I mean, we're both on the receiving end right now of negative ads and smear campaigns from independent groups. And I do think that that's a disservice and a distraction for the voters. And I think it's unfortunate because as frontline prosecutors, we've both handled a wide variety of cases. You know, I've prosecuted everything from double homicides to child abuse cases, sexual assaults, heroin dealers. It's really not a question, I don't think, about, you know, whether we are going to work our hardest to protect the citizens. It's about who's going to be the best representative and advocate for our citizens.
Brad Schimmel, same question to you. You're sharing a stage right now. Can you look your opponent in the eye and tell her she's soft on crime?
You know, we're both very different in how we've handled our district attorney's offices. And the outside groups have been relentless, and it's been tough. I'm sure my opponent feels the same way. There's days you see what's coming out and you wonder, well, what is this all about now? I hope that the voters are going to start taking a look at who we are. Take a look at our websites. Take a look at the many stories that are out there about the things that we're proposing doing with the office. They're going to find we're very different candidates, and Wisconsin has a clear choice as to who they're going to elect attorney general. You know, our records are fair game. Hopefully, they're portrayed fairly in the process. I stand by my record. I've handled nearly 10,000 cases personally in my 25 years as a prosecutor. And you know, the Wisconsin Association of Victim Witness Professionals stands by me too. They called me Professional of the Year for my work protecting women and children who were victims of sexual assault and child abuse. So I stand by my record.
Mr. Schimmel, you just said that you're very different prosecutors. How so?
Well, I have very different experience. You don't measure just experience just by the time in the chair, which is 25 years almost for me, compared to six. But you measure it also by leadership. And I've had a footprint much bigger than just Waukesha County in my career. As a young prosecutor, I was part of the team that created the first victim impact panel for chronic intoxicated drivers. I was part of the team that created Wisconsin's first victim impact panel, the first full-service child advocacy center. Both of those things happened while I was still an assistant DA.
Susan Happ, 30 seconds to respond to the differences that Mr. Schimmel points out.
Well, I think we are different. I think the first and most obvious difference is that I'm not a career politician. I wasn't handpicked by my party. I actually won a tough three-way primary to get here. And so I come from a very Republican county where I need to be able to earn votes and support, not just from people in my party, but from Democrats and independents and Republicans. And I've got a record of working with the Republican officials in my office. And just a bit of a clarification, Brad has been district attorney for 8 years, and I've been district attorney for six.
We now move along to our next question, and again, it goes first to Mr. Schimmel. Are there any state laws that you would not defend, and if not, why not?
Well, I do want to follow up on something from the last question. I was called handpicked. No one handpicked me. I worked hard when I entered this race to start securing law enforcement endorsements and to start raising money to demonstrate I was a credible candidate, and others recognized that I was the right candidate to run for Attorney General on the Republican side and chose not to run. No one handpicked me. I do know about being handpicked. Like, for instance, when the Racine County DA had a tough case where a veteran law enforcement officer was sexual assaulting his own child. and they handpicked me to come try that case down in Racine County and get a successful outcome. So I do know about Ann being handpicked in that sense.
Would you like me to go back to the question
please.
That I did just pose? And that was, are there any state laws that you would not defend? And if not, why not? Unfortunately, you don't have very much time left.
As the Attorney General, my job is to be the state's lawyer, not to pick and choose which laws I will defend and enforce. I will defend laws passed by our legislature, whether Governor Walker passed them or they're passed before his term.
Susan Happ, same questions. Are there state laws you would not defend, and if so, why?
Yes, this has come up a fair amount of time. The Attorney General certainly has an obligation and duty to defend laws, but the oath that we take when we become Attorney General says that we will uphold the U.S. Constitution. And so if our legislature and our governor passes a law that is blatantly unconstitutional, violates the United States Constitution, I would not defend that. And a good example would be the now unconstitutional ban against same-sex marriage. I was on record very early saying that I believe that that violated the United States Constitution, the Equal Protection Clause. Brad has said originally that, like our current Attorney General, that he would not have defended the Domestic Partnership Registry. He later changed his mind and said he would defend every law. So he said he would defend a ban against interracial marriage. But when we had our last debate, he was asked if he would defend the law regarding coordination of outside groups with campaigns. And he said he didn't know. He was going to have to look into that. With me, you'll always know where I stand.
Mr. Schimmel, 30 seconds to respond.
Well, the question that came up in an interview about interracial marriage was an absurd hypothetical. The U.S. Supreme Court resolved over four decades ago that question definitively, and Wisconsin thankfully never had a law that prohibited interracial marriage. The point of the question was just to gauge, would I defend laws that I didn't agree with? And I chose my words carefully when I said that I may be, as Attorney General, in a position that I have to defend a law that I find distasteful, and that could happen, yes.
And so, Ms. Happ, then 30 seconds to respond to his response.
I think it's important to point out that the Attorney General is not a robot. The past three Attorneys General, both Republican and Democrat, have, on occasion, had laws that they did not defend, including, as I said, the current Attorney General. I agree that the question posed to Brad about defending a ban on interracial marriage was absurd. But I also think it's absurd to actually say that because we say we're going to defend the laws of the state, that we wouldn't have the independence, the courage, and the judgment to say we would not defend that type of a law.
When it comes to abortion, Susan Happ, you've told Democrats that you, quote, believe in protecting a woman's right to make her own health care decision. Brad Schimmel, you told fellow Republicans at the state GOP convention this year, quote, I will fight hard to protect the rights of every Wisconsin citizen, and that includes the unborn. Why are you making a point of telling people this? I mean, how would it come up as Attorney General? Susan Happ, you go first.
You'd be surprised at the campaign trail how many times that question came up. And I think part of it is that we have seen an attack on women's rights. We've seen legislation that relates to vaginal ultrasounds. We've seen legislation currently pending now with Act 37, which relates to admitting privileges for doctors who provide abortions. And so it does come up with frequency. And I've been very candid, you know, as a woman who almost died in childbirth, talking about how personal, how complicated those decisions are, and that those decisions need to be made by women in consultation with their family, their physician, and their faith. And I believe that. And so it does come up. Now, having said that, my belief, my personal belief about the rights of women to be able to access their own health care doesn't influence my position on those issues as they make their way through the court system. But to the extent that we're going to create an undue burden, such as admitting privileges, on a woman's right to access health care, then that's something where that does come up with frequency.
Brad Schimmel, same question to you. Why tell this to people as you talk to them on campaign?
Well, the U.S. Supreme Court's decision in Roe v. Wade from 40 years ago is the law of the land, and I respect the law of the land. That's a fundamental difference between my opponent and I, because she picks and chooses which laws she'll defend and enforce. And it's frankly misleading to say you're not going to defend a particular law, because that doesn't mean the state will go undefended in that law. There will be outside counsel hired, and we'll have to pay for that. Now, I am pro-life, and I make no apologies for that. You know, I have a couple of heroes very personal to me in my life. There were two then 18-year-old women who became pregnant while they were still students, who chose to carry their children to term and deliver them and give my wife and I the gift of a family we couldn't have biologically. So yes, I'm pro-life, but I will not inflict my views or my personal agenda on anyone else. I will enforce and defend the law the way it's written by our legislature and the way it's determined by the courts.
So I want to follow up on that with the law that you referenced there. Given your views on abortion, would you be able to defend that law as Attorney General? And given your views, if Democrats were to take power and pass a law that expands abortion rights, would you be able to defend that law if it were challenged? Go first to you, to Susan Happ.
Well, I think it's really important in how you phrased the question, which was, given my views, could I defend the law? Absolutely. The problem that I have with the law itself is that the law regarding women's access to health care, their constitutional right to access health care, and that includes to access safe, legal abortions, is very clear. We cannot create an undue burden on a woman's right to access her health care. And this law picks a specific medical procedure, a single medical procedure that's been on the books for 40 years without any legal justification for singling it out.
Brad Schimmel?
The answer is yes. And as I mentioned earlier, you know, Governor Walker's been governor for just under 4 years now. There were many statutes in place before that were passed by Democrat legislatures and Democrat governors. I will enforce and defend those laws. And yes, if a Democrat legislature and governor changed the rules regarding abortion, I would, as my job, be forced to do that. The way to change the law is not by an attorney general who plays super legislator. It's by the legislature.
We move on now, and this question goes first to Brad Schimmel, and it has to do with the issues involved in the John Doe 2 investigation. Would you defend how the Government Accountability Board, the state's election agency, has interpreted the state's campaign finance laws when it comes to limiting collaboration between candidates and groups that say they are independent?
Now, the current attorney general had a conflict in this case, and so he cannot represent the Government Accountability Board because he also represents one of the judges involved in John Doe 2. He also said that the Government Accountability Board has taken a tenuous legal position relative to the statutes. Now, the GAB does have counsel. Special counsel has been appointed to represent them. They will not go unrepresented. However, laws in Wisconsin and anywhere are entitled to a presumption of constitutionality. The regulations created by a regulatory agency like the Government Accountability Board are not entitled to that same presumption. So when a regulatory agency goes outside the parameters of the law or outside the parameters of rules set by the courts in a decision, then you can't defend it. You have to advise them that you've gone beyond the standards, you've gone beyond the rules, and your position is not defensible.
And so your answer is no, you would not defend the GAB?
Not all of their decisions, no.
Susan Happ, same question. Would you defend how the Government Accountability Board has interpreted the state's campaign finance laws when it comes to limiting collaboration between candidates and groups that say they are independent?
I would, and that's because I don't see any constitutional infirmity in the law as it exists. You know, this law, simply put, is meant to prevent collaboration between these groups and to have openness and to make sure that we know that these outside groups aren't directly coordinating with the campaigns of the candidates who they are supporting. And so what I've just heard, which was different from the last debate, was that Brad was going to think about whether he would defend that law. And I hear him now saying that he would not defend that law, and that's different from saying that we have an obligation as the Attorney General to defend every single law. What's the constitutional infirmity to this law? It's meant to basically prevent corruptness in our political campaigns. And so I absolutely would defend this law that's meant to prevent that precise type of corruption.
Brad Schimmel, I don't know if I can repeat this, but what is the constitutional infirmity of that law?
I'm not sure I follow my opponent's response there, because she said that I said I would not defend the law, and I believe the question was whether I would defend the GAB.
Right.
I have not. If a law passed by our legislature has a presumption of constitutionality, and as Attorney General, you can count on me to defend the laws. I also will make sure that regulatory agencies don't go beyond the laws, the guidelines set by the statutes.
Susan Happ, you have 30 seconds if
Thank you
want
to. To clarify, I mean, the lawsuit that we're talking about, though, is the heart of the John Doe. Some of these very same targets of the John Doe investigation have brought lawsuits against the Government Accountability Board and the key district attorney who is prosecuting that. And so now the state and Attorney General Van Hollen has said that he would not defend them in those lawsuits, but they are supporting and defending that law regarding campaign coordination.
Thank you.
Offshoot of that question, another question involving the Government Accountability Board. In 2008, J.B. Van Hollen sued the GAB for not updating its voter registration database. Under what circumstances would you sue a state agency? Susan Happ, you go first.
You'd have to look clearly at every single case individually and look at the facts specific to that case. But if an agency does overreach and step outside of its statutory or regulatory authority, then I think it would be incumbent on the Attorney General to look at that violation and to determine what the appropriate action is. So if it was a broad overreach and overstepping those parameters, then I certainly would look at bringing an action against that agency, because ultimately it's the Attorney General who needs to hold those entities accountable.
Brad Schimmel?
Well, we're very similar on this answer. If a state agency is going beyond the authority that the legislature gave them, and they're not accepting the advice that the Attorney General is giving them, that you are going beyond your authority, and they still keep going forward, someone has to stop them. And I do agree that will become the role of the Attorney General, to put a stop to unlawful activity by a state regulatory agency.
Well, on that agreement kind of note, we turn now to the time in the debate where you get to ask each other a question. And so, Mr. Schimmel, you go first. Ask your question, please, of Susan Happ.
Thank you. Ms. Happ, I serve on the Wisconsin Crime Victim Council, the Judicial Council, the District Attorneys Association Board of Directors, part of creating the state's first full-service child advocacy center, first victim impact panel, things that have gone statewide as a result of that work, part of the state's first alcohol treatment court. Can you tell the viewers, please, what have you done as a prosecutor that has reached beyond the boundaries of Jefferson County?
Well, thank you. We know that you have a great resume, because you tout it very frequently. And you have been, as you said, a career prosecutor for the last 24 years. So as Jefferson County District Attorney, I've worked directly with folks in my county. I'm a member, and we formed the first sexual assault review team. I sit on the coordinated community response team, which relates to domestic violence. We work together with law enforcement and advocates in sexual assault and domestic abuse cases on a domestic homicide prevention review team. I'm very proud also that we were one of the first counties to put on a heroin task force summit to bring information to our residents of our county about the dangers and availability of opiates, about its insidiousness, and about what it looks like. And we're really seeing results by having brought together all of those people to the county. And so I do think it matters, because when things get reported on things that I'm doing within my community, they also have statewide impact, because people start talking about it and report on it.
We now take the time for you to ask Mr. Schimmel your question.
So it's a little long question, but I'd like to ask about an issue that until today really hadn't come up, and that's women's access to reproductive rights. You've said that you would defend Act 37, the law relating to doctors who provide abortion privileges to have abortion services to have hospital admitting privileges, a backdoor approach to closing women's clinics like Planned Parenthood. You've said that Roe versus Wade is the law of the land, but you personally disagree with it, and that the government shouldn't be able to require employers to include birth control in their health care plans. There's a question coming. Now, the website iVoterGuide.com says you agree with the statement that life begins at conception and deserves legal protection at every stage until natural death. Is that accurate?
Yes. I believe that life begins at conception. And I am pro-life, as I described. And I don't know how, under my circumstances, I could be anything other than that, given the circumstances with my daughters and the gift that they provided to my family. And I'll tell you a personal story about this a little bit. My oldest daughter was born on May 18. My wife's maid of honor at our wedding and her childhood best friend was born on May 18th. My younger daughter was born on March 16th. My childhood best friend and best man was born on March 16th. I am a man of faith, and I believe that now and then God gives you a message subtly, and then every once in a while he hits you upside the head with a 2x4. That was a 2x4 moment in our lives. I am pro-life. I will not defy the law of the land. I will defend Wisconsin's laws the way they're written, but I will respect the law of the land from the Supreme Court.
We leave that there. Thank you. This question goes first to Susan Happ. One of the roles in the Attorney General's office is enforcing environmental laws and prosecuting violations. So as the incoming Attorney General, would you see the need for more such enforcement or not?
Well, I think you start out with the fact that there's this wonderful unit inside the Department of Justice called the Environmental Protection Unit. And it's a very important unit within the department. They work directly with the Department of Natural Resources in terms of what violations are sent to the Department of Justice for enforcement. And so the first thing I would do as district attorney is talk to people at the DNR about the types of violations that they are seeing. You know, I grew up hunting and fishing, snowmobiling and ice fishing with my dad, and we know that our natural resources are something that we all want to preserve, and we all want to have clean air and clean water. And I want to clarify something. The last time we debated, Brad said that I wanted to stop mining in northern Wisconsin. When the moderator asked him what I had said and what the source was, he said he would look into it, but it was my Democratic convention speech. And here's what I said in that speech. Don't we have the right to breathe clean air and drink clean water without worrying about mercury emissions and silica dust? And so that's very important to me, and that's not a partisan issue.
Brad Schimmel, over to you. The same question that we began with, which was whether or not you feel as though the Attorney General's office is enforcing environmental laws and prosecuting violations enough or not.
Enforcing our environmental laws is a very important part of what the Attorney General does. And I will, like any other law, enforce those laws the way they're written by our legislature. You know, the Attorney General has an important role also in the relationship with the federal government. You know, when the Environmental Protection Agency issued its rules back on June 2nd of this year for new carbon dioxide emissions, those rules would stand to cost Wisconsin tens of thousands of jobs, according to the United States Chamber of Commerce. The Attorney General has a very important role in the environmental laws on that side as well to make sure Wisconsin is not disproportionately harmed. We're one of the top manufacturing states in America, but we are also getting 62% of our electric power from clean coal-fired plants. And if we don't defend against those rules, if they go into effect the way they are written, Wisconsin consumers will suffer in their electric bills at home, and we'll lose jobs on top of it.
I'm going to stay with you, Mr. Schimmel, on that. Is it accurate to say that you've said that you would actually sue the Environmental Protection Agency over these proposed rules?
Yes. First step is you negotiate. You make sure that they don't impose disproportionate harm on the state of Wisconsin. However, just like with other Wisconsin regulatory agencies you talked about earlier, if the United States EPA continues to go forward with rules that are going to disproportionately harm Wisconsin, yes, I would sue.
Susan Happ, what's your response to that?
I don't know how we reconcile that statement. Suing the EPA over legislation that has been enacted by Congress and saying that the Attorney General has an obligation to defend all of our laws. It sounds like an activist to me. I've been labeled an activist for saying that I want to protect our environment and I want to protect our consumers. Brad has not only said that he would sue the EPA, but he's talked about the Affordable Care Act, as well as, I think, acting as a legislator of some sort by bringing the prosecutors under the auspices of the Department of Justice, by bringing in the Lab of Hygiene under the auspices of the Department of Justice. And so in terms of the environmental protection, I think the obligation is not to go out and talk about federal overreach or take on federal governments, but federal regulations, but instead defend the laws that are on the books.
We leave it there.
I want to get back to the mine, the proposed mine that you mentioned, the proposed iron ore mine for northern Wisconsin. If that gets a state permit, it's likely to face a legal challenge. What process would you use to decide your position on whether the mine could be developed? Brad Schimmel, first to you.
Now, first off, relative to my opponent's comments about suing the EPA, it's not the job of the Wisconsin Attorney General to defend and enforce United States laws passed by the U.S. Congress. It is actually the job of the Attorney General to defend Wisconsin against an overreaching federal government. Now, as to the mine up north, when it goes through the permitting process, the Wisconsin DNR will investigate and make sure it passes all the permitting. The United States EPA will go through and make sure it passes all the permitting. Once it gets to that, there's not a role for the Attorney General. Those decisions are made by those regulatory agencies to license this to go forward. And the law was passed by Wisconsin's legislature to permit this process to move forward. So my role is not to interfere with that.
Susan Knapp?
The Attorney General certainly doesn't have to interfere, but I think the reality is that we can have job growth. We can create jobs without having that come at the detriment and the expense of our natural resources. And so I would want to look at, yes, the permitting process. If they get the appropriate permits and they follow the law, that's a good start. But I would also want to talk about, you know, how we're going to be monitoring these emissions to make sure that our land and our water and our air stays clean. And so, you know, we can actually bring both sides to the table. We can bring the mining companies to the table. We can bring, you know, concerned citizens, environmentalists to the table, and the DNR, and talk about the realistic complications and some of the negatives that can come from these mining operations, but also mindful to the fact that ultimately it is DOJ who's charged with enforcing environmental laws. So if there is spillage, if there is pollution, that's something that DOJ has to enforce anyway. So why not actually sit down at the very beginning and talk about potential implications at the outset?
I just want to follow up on that. Brad Schimmel, are you saying that if the permit is granted, that it's passed the muster of DNR regulators, at that point you're saying DOJ's job is done, that there's no role for you in the process?
Yes, the regulatory agency making determinations as to whether an enforcement action is necessary is the DNR. I don't intend to go out as Attorney General and substitute my legal expertise for their expertise for working in the field. I've been working with the DNR now for 25 years, and I respect their frontline wardens and officers. As a matter of fact, my office was honored earlier this year. My DNR prosecutors, but honored by the frontline DNR wardens for the work we've been doing in our office.
Susan Happ, what about that idea that if it passes the DNR's muster, there is no role for DOJ?
But there could be, because it is the DNR who's going to be monitoring those operations and be determining whether there are any violations. We saw just last week, you know, that there were violations that resulted in a pretty hefty fine imposed on a mining company. So my point is, I think your best bet is to bring everybody to the table, talk about potential implications before you have a problem that maybe is a bigger problem that needs fixing. And I would just encourage the DNR to always know that they can come to me to talk about small infractions and big infractions alike.
We switch gears a little bit now. The State Department of Justice has been prosecuting the arrests of people who participated in the Solidarity sing-along protest at the Capitol last year on the grounds that they were demonstrating without a permit. DOJ says hundreds of cases are still pending. If you're elected, will you continue to prosecute those cases or let them drop? This goes first to you, Susan Happ.
I was really curious how the Department of Justice became involved in those cases in the first instance. I mean, you had people who were singing, who were exercising their First Amendment right to free speech. And when the Dane County District Attorney declined to prosecute those citations, then DOJ intervened. And I think when we're talking about a time when we're looking at resources dwindling down, crime and other public protection issues escalating, there are much better ways that we could be investing our resources versus taking experienced, talented assistant attorneys general to prosecute people in the state capitol for singing.
So there's 20 seconds left of your response. Is your response that you would not continue to prosecute
those?
Well,
I would want to look at each case. So, for example, if someone was cited for disorderly conduct and they were throwing things or they were hurling, you know, insults at a law enforcement officer, that would be very different. But if someone was actually just singing in the state capitol, that's not something where I would see DOJ having any role.
Brad Schimmel, your response.
You know, this is a public building. If if a large group of people came in here and started yelling and banging drums and blowing horns and things, we'd expect that they'd be arrested and hauled off because they'd be disturbing the business we're trying to do here. This is the balance you strike in a public building. People have a right to protest the laws. They have a right to protest what their government is doing. They don't have the right to interfere with someone else's use of that, of the state's building, of the people's building. You know, I went on a field trip with my younger daughter as one of the chaperones. I can't remember how long ago it was, though. But, you know, we were there, and as we were going through the main rotunda area, there were people there shouting and yelling, and it, you know, disturbed the kids. It bothered these grade school kids to see that happening and wondering, why is this place like that? You know, and I've talked to the Capitol Police officers who work in that building. They're trying to maintain order. They need someone who's going to enforce the laws. If you don't like the ordinance that's written, then get the ordinance changed.
Thank you.
Before concealed carry was legalized in Wisconsin, the current attorney general wrote an advisory opinion saying that openly carrying a firearm was perfectly legal. Would this also be your opinion? Brad Schimmel, to you first.
Yes. The Second Amendment is very important, and it is legal under Wisconsin law and under federal law and the mandates of our Constitution that carrying a firearm, as long as you are a person who may lawfully do so, is legal. And, you know, I also grew up hunting and fishing with my grandfather and my father, and as a result of that, I inherited my grandfather's guns. And I was fortunate enough, summer of 2013, took my daughters up north and taught them how to shoot with those very same guns I inherited. That's a great family tradition. That's a great heritage to pass on. But the Second Amendment isn't about family heritage. The Second Amendment is about liberty. And that constitutional amendment is not to be kicked to the curb lightly.
Susan Epp?
So with regard to the open carry, I think a lot of people are disturbed when they see someone open and carrying. But it is legal. And unless someone is using that weapon or brandishing it in some way that, you know, causes a severe disturbance, it is legal. I got a carry conceal permit. I'm a member of law enforcement. I grew up around guns, and I, too, have a great appreciation and respect for the Second Amendment. So, you know, in terms of open carry, it may be personally offensive to some folks, and it may make them sort of uneasy. Even as a member of law enforcement, it makes me, admittedly, uneasy when I just see someone walking around town, you know, with a gun on their hip. But that is their right under the Second Amendment to be able, and under the law, to be able to do so.
More broadly to the candidates, what is your answer to gun violence? Susan Happ, first to you.
Sure. So, well, first of all, we know we've got to do more. You know, growing up with a respect for firearms, I also grow up with a respect for the responsibility that comes with firearms. And so we know that we've got to do more in terms of curbing gun violence. It's just we're seeing way too many statistics. And the one that comes up of recent memory is the Brookfield Spa shooting, where a man who shouldn't have been able to get a gun was able to get a gun and kill three people. And so I've talked about the need for universal background checks, which is about keeping guns out of the hands of people who shouldn't have them.
I think that our timer thought that was a follow-up and was 30 seconds, so I'm putting 30 more seconds on the clock for you to talk about your idea of universal background checks.
Thank you. I thought that went pretty fast.
Yeah.
But, you know, with regard to the universal background checks, I think it's really important to point out that 40% of the gun sales that occur in Wisconsin occur either across the table or through the internet without any background checks or any restrictions whatsoever. And so if we can put impediments in the way of criminals and people who can't have guns to getting them, and like the Azana Spa shooting incident, we should do so. And that woman's brother was an NRA member, and he also supports those background checks.
So, Brad Schimmel, what is your answer to gun violence?
You know, the problem with gun violence is we need to enforce the laws we have. We have plenty of laws on the books that enable us to prosecute and incarcerate people who use guns improperly. And that's where we're coming up short. And one of the things we can do to fix that is covered in my plan that you can on my website that would move the district attorney's program over to the Department of Justice so that we can make sure that program gets the help it needs, because right now in the Department of Administration we are not well represented. And making more laws that make it more difficult for law-abiding gun owners to exercise their Second Amendment rights does not make a community safer. I've been working for 25 years as a prosecutor right next door to Milwaukee County, where half of the violent crime in Wisconsin occurs. I've seen what's happening there, and I'm seeing that the laws are not prosecuted effectively. I have a plan that is approved, that Sheriff Clark has approved, and I'm proud to have the endorsement of the Milwaukee Professional Police Association as the right candidate to keep Milwaukee safe.
Thank you.
What would you do specifically to improve in the area of internet crimes against children, where the current Justice Department took years to investigate some tips on Wisconsin child pornography cases? Brad Schimmel, you go first.
You know, I was one of the first prosecutors in the state to start taking cases to trial for internet travelers who come travel to try to meet kids in our state for sex. One of the first prosecutors to take cases to trial for online child pornography. And I developed some expertise on that, and I've been called upon to present at statewide conferences for law enforcement and prosecutors and educators and child protection workers and even medical providers. I also am one of the trainers for the State Internet Crimes Against Children Task Force. Many of the law enforcement officers in our state who do that work have been trained by me. Now, the problem we have is that the tips coming from the National Center for Missing and Exploited Children have tripled. And you can't do the same amount of work, you can't do three times the work with the same number of people. You can't put 50 pounds of groceries in a 15-pound bag. So we have to bolster those resources. We've got to put more people working on those cases. We've got to make sure the Internet Crimes Against Children partners, the task force partners, are up and trained and ready to take those cases, and we get them to them quickly.
Susan Happ?
Yeah, we certainly know from the past experience when we saw the tips that hadn't been processed timely that we have to more efficiently process those tips. And the tips have increased monumentally because as technology becomes more sophisticated, so do the offenders. So that's a good first step, but we have to take it further. We have to make sure that there's oversight. And so I've proposed that we have an assistant attorney general who's charged as sort of the point person, the person where the Division of Criminal Investigation could go with questions, local law enforcement go with questions, and there would be some oversight to make sure that those tips are being processed quickly. But that's not enough. As someone who comes from a community where I had a detective who would actually pose as a child, I had a guy from Wyoming come in his semi with condoms in the box seat ready to have sex with a 13-year-old child. And I've prosecuted many of those cases. That man is in prison. But we've also got to work with our kids. We've got to talk to them about cyber safety and sexting, Xbox and other video gaming systems where predators are out there and they're targeting our kids.
We've talked about a lot of issues already in this hour, so I'm going to kind of let this sink in a little bit and ask you to name the number one priority you would undertake in your first 100 days in office. First to you, Susan Happ.
Just one, huh? Mm. If I had to pick one, there are a number of things, and you've mentioned many of them, internet crimes, domestic violence, and gun violence. But if it was one, it really would be the heroin and opiate epidemic, because I've had to sit in conference rooms with family members who have lost a loved one to heroin overdose death. We had a young woman, a 17-year-old girl, who is a heroin overdose victim in our county. And that's a conversation that no prosecutor wants to have with any family member. And so we do need a multifaceted collaborative approach. I've been a founding member of the Jefferson County Heroin Task Force, and we put on those heroin summits that I talked about. And the Department of Justice has done a good job of making information available. But what I like about those summits is it brings the information to the people. It puts a human face on the heroin epidemic. But the other side of that, too, is we have to aggressively prosecute those dealers who are putting the lives of others at risk. In my county, that's almost always a prison sentence. And so you have to have a multifaceted approach, but that, if I had to pick one, that would probably be the top priority.
Brad Schimmel, your number one priority, first 100 days?
Same thing, heroin and prescription opiates. And I'm very proud that in Waukesha County, under my leadership, the state, we prosecute more drug dealers who cause death than any other community in the state, more than Milwaukee County that has over four times as many deaths as we do, more than Dane County that has twice as many deaths as we do. Because when I was an assistant DA, I was serving in the drug unit. We saw this coming in 2006. We saw more deaths. We saw heroin showing up in suburban neighborhoods. And I resolved when I became DA that we are going to do something different. And we got our law enforcement trained, we got our prosecutors trained, and we made a difference. And we're number one for prosecuting those drug dealers. But we won't solve this just through enforcement. And I'm very proud to have served on the statewide task force that developed the recommendations that ultimately became most of Representative Nygren's HOPE legislation. And that legislation gives us some real tools. It passed our legislature unanimously, and it provided the grants that many communities have been able to use to start up their own drug treatment courts.
You know, given that this is both of your number one priority in the first 100 days, I say we give it 30 extra seconds each. Susan Happ.
Sure. So, you know, with the heroin opiate epidemic, I think the thing there where there's a disconnect with many citizens is that they don't understand that it's all of our problems. And so having these heroin summits, having things talked about in the press is really helpful because they understand it's all of our problems. There's the loss of human life. There's the crime itself. There's the property crimes that escalate because people are heroin addicted. We've had armed robberies and bank robberies in Jefferson County because of heroin addiction. So again, putting that human face on it and knowing what we can do to combat it.
Brad Schimmel.
You know, I'm proud to have led the charge in my county to create our drug treatment court, which was one of the early ones in the state of Wisconsin. And it's been up and running for years now and very successful. That's a part of the solution. I have a comprehensive plan called Support and Training for Opiate Prevention that you can find on my website. And because of the plans, the vision I have for the office, I am law enforcement's choice in this race. I have 89 elected sheriffs and district attorneys, both Republicans and Democrats, that are endorsing me to be the next top cop.
The legislature recently changed the law to take DNA from those suspected of committing violent crimes when they're arrested rather than when they're convicted. Do you support that change in the law? And if so, why? Brad Schimmel, to you first.
Well, it's a law that was passed by our legislature. And as I've talked about before, I don't pick and choose which ones to support and which ones to enforce. The legislature passed it, it's entitled to a presumption of constitutionality, and you can count on me to defend it. Now, I do believe, as a law enforcement official, that this law makes good sense because we have an opportunity to get information that can help us solve crimes, keep the community safe earlier on. We need to be very sure that the restrictions that have been put in place on this program are enforced carefully, that we have very limited access, have very limited number of people who have access to the information from these samples that are collected, that we don't pass on the identifying information to anyone until the that DNA has been matched up as being involved in a crime. We've got to be careful about this to protect the rights of citizens, but at the same time, this is a useful law enforcement tool, and it's a law, so I will defend it.
Susan Happ.
This is an example of a law that I don't personally agree with, but I would absolutely enforce because it is the law. I share many of the same concerns about the need to make sure that the DNA that is obtained is held closely, that that all of the rules are followed with regard to personal identifiers, but that it can also be a good law enforcement tool, but cognizant, again, of the balance between people who are presumed innocent until proven guilty. But again, it's a law that was passed by the legislature, and I can't find a constitutional infirmity such that I would say that I would not defend it. So it's a good example of a law where I don't personally agree with it, but at the same time, I would be obligated and I would defend it.
You both referenced the legislature there, but I mean, this is something that was put on their plate by the Department of Justice. It was in the DOJ's budget. You would have a chance to propose changes to that law. Would you expand it to more types of criminals, or would you want to scale it back or suggest to the legislature that they scale it back?
I don't have any suggestions for the legislature for expansion or restriction or contraction of it. I do think it's important that we make sure that the law provides that we don't leave local sheriff's departments and police departments with the responsibility for hanging on to the untested samples, that these get moved over to the Department of Justice, and I will advocate for that change.
Susan Happ?
I've had cases where I've talked to legislators about statutes that either have an unintended consequence or if I see a gap, in the system. This is something that, as I said, you know, I have a personal struggle with. But again, it's a law that has been passed and it's been through. I would like to talk to members of law enforcement and people over at the crime lab to see how the law hit, what the impact has actually been about it before I would ever really suggest you talking to legislators about either a change in terms of expansion or narrowing it.
The state attorney general has been asked to issue a formal opinion on whether Wisconsin can legally restrict land sales to foreign investors. What would your opinion be? First to you, Susan Happ.
Well, now that's a first one. I must be on public TV. You know, I'd want to take a hard look at it, right, to see what the law is, and then certainly confer with those in the department before, you know, issuing a decision. Because these are things that, you know, people look to for guidance, even though they're persuasive in nature. They certainly have a tremendous potential to have broad sweeping implications. So I'd want to look at it very closely, see what the law, you know, would be, see how it impacts, you know, people's right to do what they want with their property, and then make a, you know, a well-reasoned, sound decision after looking at all the facts and as well as, of course, the Constitution.
Same public TV question to you, Gretchen.
Yeah. You got me on a new one, too. I've never done any research on this particular issue, and I wouldn't want to offer an opinion either where I don't have the research to be able to support that opinion.
All right. Sorry about that.
All right, we're going to have brief answers to this. The last question, anything said here tonight that you would like your opponent to retract? Okay, I'm told we can have a minute for this one. Okay, anything that you would like your opponent specifically to retract?
Not from this debate. I think there's been a lot that's gone on the campaign trail lately. That so, perhaps both of us wish, you know, that our parties could retract. I've certainly been attacked in a lot of personal ways, particularly with regard to, you know, certain cases that we've each had. And so in some level, I'd like to be able to change the nature of the discussion and the discourse. But I think, you know, Brad and I have been neighboring district attorneys for several years now, and we've always had a good working relationship. You know, we've referred cases to each other. Certainly sought each other's advice and, you know, other prosecutors around the state in terms of, you know, working together, you know, for the better good and for the better of our community. So, you know, I feel like the questions you've asked and I feel like the issues that we've covered, quite frankly, have been fair. And I think, as Brad said at the beginning, they just are a good demonstration of the differences between us.
Same question. You get a chance to ask for a retraction.
Yeah. I'm going to give the same answer. I do agree that the question, the way you formatted this discussion tonight, has been fair, and I don't think we've played gotcha moments on each other in this. We have been neighboring prosecutors for 6 years now, and we have had a professional relationship with each other, and it's been cordial. You know, there are some things that are coming from the outside groups, some of the groups that are supporting one or the other of us, and some of those things have gotten a little nasty, but we don't control those things. And I do think that I don't have anything tonight that I'm asking for a retraction on.
All right. Well,
I think you were anticipating things getting different than it got tonight.
We appreciate it. It is time now, though, for closing statements. Prior to the broadcast, a coin flip determined that Brad Schimmel will go first, followed by Susan Happ. Brad Schimmel, go ahead with your closing.
Well, thank you. I'm proud to be law enforcement's choice to be Wisconsin's next attorney general. Because the brave men and women working on the front lines of public safety know that I always put public safety ahead of politics. That's why I have the endorsement. I'm the only candidate with bipartisan endorsements from both Republican and Democrat district attorneys and sheriffs statewide. I'm a prosecutor. My oath will be to the law and to the constitutions, not to a political party and not to any partisan agenda. My opponent and I have different, very different views about the role of the Attorney General. My opponent is an activist. She is promising that there are laws she will not enforce or defend. I, in meanwhile, have been putting forward plans to deal with Wisconsin's toughest public safety challenges like heroin, human trafficking, child abuse, violence against women. I've been recognized as Professional of the Year for my work protecting women and children who are victims of abuse. I'm asking for your vote for a safe Wisconsin.
And now for Susan Happ's closing statement.
Thank you. I'm an experienced frontline prosecutor with endorsements from law enforcement across the state. I've locked up serial killers, heroin dealers, sexual predators, and domestic abusers. Protecting women and children has been a priority for me as district attorney and will be a priority as attorney general. I'll fight to protect the rights of women to make their own health care decisions and to be paid equally for their work. I'm not a career politician. I wasn't handpicked by my party. I won a tough three-way primary to be here. The people chose me. I have a proven record of working with Republicans and Democrats alike to protect our citizens, and I won't bring a partisan political agenda to the Attorney General's office. I will talk straight, and you will always know where I stand. As your Attorney General, I will work my heart out every day to do what's right and to represent you, not any political or special interests. I'm asking for your support and your vote. Thank you.
That's all for tonight's debate. You can find the debate posted at wisconsinvote.org. Reports on this race, as well as interviews with candidates in other statewide races, are there as well. I'm Sean Johnson of Wisconsin Public Radio.
We want to thank the candidates also, and also look for election coverage from our partners at the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel and Wisconsin Public Radio. Here and Now returns next Friday night. I'm Frederica Freiberg. Thanks for watching, and have a great weekend.